and Policy Division will come to order for March 6, 2007. I have one announcement to make. Happy birthday, Sophia. And I guess we'll start out with Senator Pogemiller. And I'm told that Senator Pogemiller's bill is somewhere down in the packet for anybody who's in here, but nobody's in here. So Senator Pogemiller will be laying these over for possible inclusion afterwards. So please start. And
Mr. Chairman, could I ask, I know you just came out of a budget chair's target setting meeting. Are you in a decent mood, or are you, should I keep this short?
Senator Pogemiller, I'm not going to comment.
I better keep it short. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1216, there's a delete everything in A1 that I just would have members focus on. And it's similar to the bill as introduced with just a couple minor modifications.
And I think, Senator Pogemiller, that we will have to proceed or just work off the A1, and then when we get a, quorum, we'll put it on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, this is an idea that has been before the committee before. It's a grant program established to encourage students in both public and private institutions enrolled in post-secondary institutions in Minnesota to acquire a more global understanding and perspective by living and studying in foreign countries as part of their post-secondary experience. It would be administered by HESO. Priorities would be given to areas of study that are traditionally underrepresented in study abroad programs and areas and cultures traditionally underrepresented. In other words, countries that, you know, maybe the Middle East or maybe China, but not necessarily just France and England. The students would commit to learning in the host country's language and so that they can learn cultures and customs of the host country. So it's intended to be for second language students, not just for students to go and speak English in another country, but perhaps study and work and participate in the language of the country they're moving to. There'd be a $10,000 maximum per student, $10 million biennium for the biennial appropriation. That's about 1,000 grants. The exact specifics of that would be set up by the higher ed institutions in terms of how to dovetail that with their current programs. And the most of this language is taken from some federal commission recommendations and some recently passed federal legislation. I'd like to defer to Meredith McQuaid, who is the Associate Vice President and Dean of International Programs at the University of Minnesota. Keep in mind, though, that this is for both public and non-public schools. It's not limited to just the public institutions, because there's quite a bit of activity going on in the Augsburgs and St. Thomas's too. So, Ms. McQuaid.
Ms. McQuaid, welcome.
Thank you.
To the committee. Or, nice to see you. Go
ahead. Well, I greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here. I think this is a wonderful idea. And it does, in fact, mirror the Lincoln Fellowship Program that Senator Coleman has introduced at the national level. It is true that cost is one of the biggest barriers to students studying abroad. At the University of Minnesota, we offer right around $300,000 worth of scholarships for study abroad, but it's still not quite enough to assist everyone who would like to. Additionally, for students at public schools, many of the study abroad programs actually cost a little more than their public school tuition. So for public schools, these kinds of grants would really facilitate additional students studying abroad. I like the priorities that are laid out in section subdivision 3, identifying that grant recipients will be identified meeting one or more of the following criteria, and the first one is sort of non-traditional majors as well as non-traditional students, mathematics, engineering, computer science. Those students typically can find it difficult to find a study abroad program that matches their interests, as well as identifying not only places that are historically underrepresented for study abroad, but students who historically are underrepresented in study abroad populations. And then the promotion of language study is an excellent way to improve our potential workforce.
And Mr. Chairman, just to kind of
Senator Pogemiller.
Overall focus, I think there are about 3,000 mainland Chinese students at the University of Minnesota, and I think it's the largest contingent in the nation. And it just seems like it's in our interest, both economically and socially, to kind of start matching that kind of overseas experience because it will help us in the long term, both economically and socially. And I think as some of these countries start to upgrade their higher ed systems, I think the United States is going to start to lose out because they may not be choosing our higher ed institutions at that time because they may not be the best institutions in the world any longer. And I think we need to start now kind of showing encouragement for students to do this so that it starts to filter down to our K-12 system that second languages are crucially important to both their economic and social well-being in the future. And I think this would do that. If people knew that this was an opportunity that they could use their foreign language as they get into college, I think more people would emphasize it in the elementary and high school levels. So it dovetails with a lot of the push to get immersion programs in the K-12 system also.
Well, and
Mr. Chairman, if in a perfect world, I would say, I know we can't afford this right now, but I would say that the United States should take a position that nobody is a well-educated, well-rounded college graduate unless they have a second language and have studied in a foreign country. That would be a goal, I think, that we should aspire to because that's what's going on in other countries. They are multilingual, and their best and brightest have traveled to other countries.
Well, Senator Pogelman, there's certainly a lot to be learned when you go to a different country and find out how they do things as compared to how we do them here. And
we could send some to Italy, Mr.
Well,
Chairman.
I definitely had a very interesting experience there. And you get to travel all over Europe when you're in close proximity, and you do learn different languages, and you actually learn a little bit about the English language when you learn foreign languages, too. The Iron Range is working with China in the taconite industry. We have partners on the Iron Range, so your point is very well taken.
Don't worry about it right now.
Do you have anybody else who wants to comment on this, Senator Pogelman?
I don't think so, Mr. Chairman. There is interest in the in both in the private colleges and in the other Minsky institutions for this, and I think they would all develop this through HESO in a way that worked for their different approaches and their different institutions. And I think the whole approach here is just to upgrade this statewide and make a larger commitment to it than we have so far as a community. And I know the committee is going to have incredibly tight budget constraints. I don't know if this is the year to get this done, but obviously I'd be thrilled if the committee could fit it in. But I know there are many things tugging at your hearts.
Okay, and you don't have any other witnesses that want to testify, right?
I don't, but
can I make one more comment?
Ms. McQuaid wanted to make another comment.
Okay,
I was just at a conference of the American Association of International Educators, and they're from colleges and universities all across the country. And to an institution, people are struggling with how to get their students abroad. We're all struggling with how to attract foreign students to our individual colleges and universities as well, particularly here in the Midwest. But everyone is trying to figure out how to induce students and provide them with the opportunity to study abroad. And I think the Minnesota legislature is quite far-sighted in considering this at all. But many universities and colleges are jealous just to know that we live in a state where it's even possible draft legislation, that the ability, the incentive to get our students studying abroad is at least on your agenda is very impressive.
Do you have an estimate of how many students in our higher ed institutions do study abroad now for extended periods?
Well, most institutions are between about the 10 and 15% level, and that would be an average. There's plenty of institutions with numbers of students below that. The University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus is right around 23%, and the University of Minnesota's goal is to get that to 50%. And we've been working very hard on that goal. University of Minnesota Crookston has tripled the number of students that have gone abroad in the last couple of years. And indeed, Crookston is working hard to attract foreign students to the campus as well.
They go to North Dakota? Is that where they go?
Pardon me?
They go to North Dakota.
Yeah. Could be in Canada anyway. I appreciate the consideration. It's very important.
Just out of curiosity, we had a bill in here the other day about charging everybody the same tuition as opposed to outstate tuition. Do we do that at the U? I mean, are there students coming from abroad who pay in-state tuition, or are they all paying?
We have, this year the administration has been even more generous. We do have tuition waivers available that waive the out-of-state tuition to the in-state rate. And we've increased the number this year quite substantially because we realize that cost is prohibitive for many, many, many foreign students. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think the numbers on the main campus are mostly graduate students, aren't they?
Yes, but the undergraduate population is slowly starting to grow. But, yeah, mainly they're graduate students.
So in the graduate level, you'd have graduate assistants. They'd be teaching and so forth also.
Right.
Any other comments? Okay, thank you, Senator Pogamiel. We'll lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Just for everybody who's sitting here watching, I want to point out that the table's empty. It's only Senator Wieger and I are here, and it's a busy time in the legislative session right now, and there's people doing bills in all kinds of other committees, and so you know, little by little people will start filtering in here as they have time. I myself had four bills I had to do yesterday, so I was between three or four different committees, and you have a committee to serve on, and then you have other committees where you have to present bills. So if you're just wondering why the table's empty, that's what's going on here. So we're kind of in a way we're gonna deal with this is we'll be taking testimony on these bills. And they'll be on the tape for official transcribing. And then what we'll do later on is we'll consider the bills in the overall picture of the omnibus higher education bill, and figure out whether or not they fit into the targets that we've been recently given, so that we can decide whether or not we fund certain projects or we don't fund certain projects, or how this will all work. So. That's what we just did with Senator Pogamiller, and so do we have who's
Senator Torres Ray?
Senator Torres Ray is here, yes. So, Senate File 1522. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wieger, yeah, this is a small committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present Senate File 1522. Senator Wieger probably knows that I have been working very hard to try to bring the voices of parents to the table so that we can really talk about the impact of the decisions we make related to education. Senate File 1522 today, that I'm presenting today, is related to this process and this effort that I'm trying to build here to include parent participation. I am asking for your support to fund the Learning Dreams program. This program is piloted at the University of Minnesota, and it has been used as a model to promote success for parents and students. Mr. Chair and Senator Wieger, this is a very interesting project, and I would like to let everybody know about some of the progress that this program has made with really creating a community of learning. Many of the proposals that have come before the Education Committee talk about the importance of parent participation. What has been I think lacking in some of these proposals is a component that really encourages parents to pursue their own learning dreams and to work with communities to create communities of learning so that they can support their own children. I have invited people from the university who have worked in these programs and a parent who have participated in these programs so they can talk about their experience and present the details of the program. And with me, I have Dr. Jerry Stein, who directs the program, and I have Mr. Mark Hendricks, and I have a parent also who has participated in the program, Ms. Khadija Ali. And I'm going to ask Dr. Jerry Stein to please present the program to you, and he also has a handout that will be passed on to you so that you can have this information with you after we leave.
Dr. Stein, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Senator. Learning Dreams is based on the idea that we all actually already know that parent involvement is the single most important factor that leads to their kids doing well in school and having ultimate success in their lives. If you really think about parent involvement, it means parent involvement supporting their children in their learning. And we keep trying to work it that way, but many, many parents are unable to do that well. And we believe that if parents love their kids, that will be a significant enough background for them to be able to smartly intervene and support their learning. In Learning Dreams, we changed the definition of parent involvement. We think of it, parents need to be involved in the culture of learning itself as active and strong learners. And we don't go in with a better parent curriculum. We believe their own aspirations, what they want to learn for their own lives, is the key to their becoming active learners. And only after that can we hope for them to have success working with their kids. So if we have a child who's struggling with a school success, we visit the parent at their home. We don't have to get the parent to come in somewhere. And we ask the parent what their learning dream is. We believed these are the parents that are most cut off from school. They don't come in. Their kids aren't doing well. We believe that with this approach, they would actually be very eager to participate in learning, and that if we worked with many, many families in one community, one town or one neighborhood, that over time we would generate enormous energy to support learning in the families, that we would heal the rupture, the relationship between the families and the schools, which at the moment is not, with these families is very bad, and that would lead eventually to institutional change as well as family support. So that's the theory behind it. After the pilot project of 3 years was over, the local school connected with these families had 100% parent involvement and zero truancy, and test scores went up. It was kind of hard to believe how good it worked out. And so Hennepin County was very interested in those outcomes because they put a lot of money into truancy, and so they've funded a replication in southeast Minneapolis. The Northwest Area Foundation has put funds into funding a replication in Worthington, Minnesota, and they've been running for a year now. And we just had an outside evaluation of the project, and that says that program recruitment is snowballing because the families are telling other families they need to get involved in learning, that the key structural difference in how we work is that we're out in the neighborhoods working with people in their homes. People don't have to come into the institutions, and that the partners, that's the schools, are very excited about what we're doing because it takes the burden off of them to be communicating more effectively with families. So we're getting very good results from the first year, but we're getting by on a shoestring, and it could be an exciting time for the state to decide to deepen the concept of what parent involvement is about, and in so doing, reach the families that have been cut out of school success. Thank you.
Thank you, and it's Dr. Stein. Great. This is the staff has just suggested to me that this might be more of a request from the K-12 budget. I see the money is, we don't usually appropriate directly to a school at the university. That's not something that we typically do. I assume that the school social work is already funded by the university.
Yes.
It's a facetious question.
Absolutely. Yeah, good. I guess I should have given a facetious answer.
I think what happens is, in all practicality, if it's not in the university, if it's in the university's strategic plan, it's funded through Advancing Education or one of the major initiatives that the university asks us for money for. And otherwise, I think you're at risk of, if we appropriate directly, they would simply make a corresponding reduction.
Right, which would get me in trouble with the deans.
Right. So I know that you're here on the request of Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair.
I think if you went through the K-12 committee, that would not be as likely to happen. Senator.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, originally that was our intent and that's our plan. I think the question for the Education Finance Committee was the adult component of this particular program. And that's where they have suggested that I come here to ask for that portion of the funding. Part of it, the intent here is really to work with families and to work with communities to expand this program to create these communities of learning. In this process, we want to make sure that that the communities and everyone understands really the value of working with parents. And because we haven't had really a strong proposal before the K-12 committee, we came and I tried to do a lot of research to find out what is that we have and not to recreate something that it already exists. And this is a very successful program. So in response to your question, I think the suggestion to come to before your committee was made by Senator Stamp's committee to come over here because there is an adult component to this bill.
Are the adults going to college?
Some of them may, but that has not maybe process.
It's not just because we deal with adults. We deal with colleges and universities.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have in our budget, GED for adults. Maybe we should. We don't have workforce training in our budget. The House does. We don't. Well, maybe we should hear from your other witnesses.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the committee, and could you introduce yourself, please?
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee. Thank you for this opportunity to speak a little bit about Learning Dreams. We
do you say your name, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Mark Hendricks, and I'm a licensed educator, and I'm the neighborhood and community educator for Southeast Minneapolis Learning Dreams. And I've been teaching for about 20 years. I've taught in public, private, charter, alternative school settings. Learning Dreams is by far the most powerful thing I've ever worked with in terms of reaching families and communities for learning. To be with people in their homes and talk to them about creating their own learning dreams occupies kind of a strange space because you're working with both the children and the adults. And so having them plan things out, sometimes you're working with children agencies and sometimes you're working with adult agencies like adult basic education or a college or university. And I would like to introduce Khadija Ali, who is a college student and is looking for help with her college stuff that she does, but not everyone who is in Learning Dreams. And Khadija has introduced me to other members of the community that also need, they also need to do some learning, but they're not in the same place. So that's why we occupy sort of a strange, sort of new territory in terms of parent involvement in learning.
Ms. Juwali, would you spell your name, please?
Khadijo, last name Ali.
I'm sorry that from what I wrote, from what he told me, it didn't correspond to what you spelled for me. Could you say your name again? No, say it.
Khadijo Ali.
Khadijo Ali. Okay, I got it. Khadijo Ali. Welcome.
Madam Chair, member of the community, my name is Khadija Ali. I'm one of the parents who is participating in Learning Dream. Learning Dream came to my door. I'm a mother with three children and going to school. I've been in this country for 5 years. I've been struggling all this time for my school, for my kids, for everything. This program knocked on my door, asking me what is your learning dream. Every mother have a learning dream, especially I have a learning dream. I want to be successful in my own life and my own three children. I want to have some life in this country. I come from, and I am an immigrant, came from Somalia, and every person who came another country, they have a struggle to the other countries that they came in terms of everything. In what is the difference between this program and the other program that I've been involved is that you go there and you ask what is your needs. But this one is kind of a proud and came to my house and asking me, learning dream, what is your learning dream? My learning dream is to build a life in here. And what helped in this program is that how would I build and to have a life in here? I struggle. My kids go to school, and there is a lot of things that the school have a problem with. And what I do is I don't have help, a lot of help, how to help my kids, how to get school help, how to get sometimes scholarships, how to get different kind of things that I want to get to my kids. When Mark came to my door, I asked him, can you help me with two things? And the two things that I asked him is how to educate my kids and how you help me going to school to be successful. Even I am also a student going to school and getting education. And I also introduced a couple of other parents who live my neighbor who are having difficulties. They're having difficulties through jobs. They're having difficulties through school. They're having difficulties through understanding the school teachers and their children and how they communicate with that. He helping us as of how we're going to be open to the school, how we can help our children, what kind of things that we need to help our children. And the things that we need to help our children, the way he's helping us is that he's around us. He's making us comfortable to understand how we're involved with the school and us and kids. And the things that he's helping us also is how we can get computers, how we can improve working with our kids, the programs that the school needs us to work our kids. He's helping us also how we can find jobs. He's helping us also how we can improve our lives by working, by going to school, by also helping our community. There is a lot of things in a community that we didn't know, and I live in Glendale community. I did not know much of our community, but he helped us. What he did is that he did a gathering. He introduced to other parents who really have been struggled. He's not only helping about how we improve in life, he's also helping us how to get things that we need, what the parents, the way, what streets that we go, how to get the things we need. For example, he's helping my neighbors who are struggling how to get license. They don't know how to get a license. He's helping how to get a license. He's helping me how to improve my scholarship to school. Where is I need to get loans? Where do I need to get scholarships? How I can improve that? He's helping how I can get a computer. Yeah. He's helping a lot of things. It's not only that a students and how they improve, but also they improve in the community, how we can gather, how we can help, how we can build our community.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Jolie. Could you tell me how the program is being funded now?
Currently, Hennepin County is putting funds into the replication, and also we have funds from a Northwest Area Foundation, the Southwest Initiative, and the MARDEG Foundation. We're getting by barely, but there are people very interested in trying to replicate the program.
Okay, are there any questions from members of the committee? Then I believe we had a quorum, so maybe Senator Wieger would move that Senate File 1522 be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you
very
Madam
much.
Chair.
I appreciate
Thank
you coming in.
Thank you.
Did someone want to make that motion on 1216? Senator Wieger moves that 1216 be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say
what? An amendment.
Oh, as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam
Hi,
Chair.
Welcome.
Members, I'm here today on behalf of Senate File 1351, which is a bill for, which would relocate the American Indian Scholarship Program, or at least an officer on behalf of this program, back to the Bemidji area. Specifically, the bill calls for one staff person to be present at Bemidji State University for the distribution of scholarships under this section. And then the second section of the bill is for an appropriation of $1,875,000 each year for the biennium. I have with me here today a number of people who are members of the various bands in the area. Roger Aiken, who is a chairman of the board of directors for the Indian Alumni from BSU, and a Leech Lake band member. Will Antel, who is a White Earth band member, former director of the Indian Education Department. Irene Aganawash, who is the tribal...
Aganash,
the Tribal Council for White Earth Nation. And there, I believe there may be other people in the audience, depending on time availability, who would like to support this as well. I also have a letter that I'd like to have passed out, if possible, from Dr. Quisgard, who's the president of Bemidji State University, offering, in support of this proposal, and offering to have the office located at BSU.
Senator Olson, was the previous office at BSU, or was it with the... I noticed the Indian Affairs Council has an office in Bemidji.
Yes, and I believe the... I don't believe it was, Roger?
No, it was not.
Okay, I don't believe it was
Where was
at BSU.
It before?
It was located in Bemidji.
In downtown Bemidji?
Is it state office building?
Okay. Oh, I guess it was in the state office building,
okay.
Senator.
That was Mr. Aiken?
Aiken,
sorry.
And so... If you're ready to have witnesses begin, or do you have some more questions?
I am ready. I just want to know, Senator Olson, is the president offering free space for the program?
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair.
Because I think wasn't that one of the issues with the Department of Education, that they want to pay for the space during after the budget cuts?
That may have been one of the previous issues, but that won't be a problem under this proposal. It's already been coordinated with Dr. Quisgard.
And Senator Olson, have you had any conversations at all with the K-12 chair? Because is this money in the – is this base funding for the program?
I believe that this is –
What's currently appropriated?
I believe that there is current appropriation for the bill, but I think that this is a slight increase.
Okay, well, we'd have to check that out because we'd have to get the base appropriation transferred over to our division. If we were going to do this. Okay, why don't we hear from your witnesses?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Roger Aiken. I'm a Leech Lake band member and reside in Walker, Minnesota. Excuse me. I'm a product of the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program and a graduate of Bemidji State University. In 2002, when the move was proposed by the Department of Education and under the governor's initiative to save money, this proposal was opposed by the Minnesota tribes, the Minnesota Chippewa tribe in particular.
Mr. Aiken, you're talking about the discontinuation of the Bemidji office, or what move
the relocation
are you
talking about? Of the office.
The relocation of the office.
The discontinuation of the office, the relocation in Roseville, was opposed by the Minnesota tribes, Minnesota Chippewa tribes. It was also opposed by the Minnesota Association of Financial Administrators, primarily because the in 50 years ago, 1954, when the program was created, the tribal governments and the legislators had the foresight and the wisdom to want to locate the office where it was going to be most well used in the heart of Indian country at the time, and where it was accessible. By moving the state office to Roseville, It did a couple of things. It took on a whole new personality in that it virtually eliminated tribal government involvement, eliminated tribal government communications, which is extremely important to the growth and development of the scholarship program. Tribes have the wherewithal to now conduct and fund some of their own higher education scholarship programs. But as you all know, higher education is extremely expensive. And historically, before 2002, one of the strengths of the program in Bemidji was that it called package funding. The State Indian Scholarship Program was able to collaborate with at least four or five other different packages, different other higher education scholarship programs as the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program, the Tribal Scholarships Program, the Pell Grants, the Minnesota State Grant Program, and the SEOG. All of those contributed toward a funding package for students. That apparently has changed in the last 4 years since the Roseville administration has been running the program. Apparently, only those students now who are eligible for Pell Grants and receive State Indian Scholarship Program. Essentially, that would eliminate about one-third of the students who are eligible for the State Indian Scholarship Program. Historically, when the Bemidji office ran the program, they had an average of 1,200 students at one time or another as part of their student program. When it came to Roseville, that number was decreased substantially, primarily because two things, accessibility, communications with students, and the relationship with Indian tribes. So as in this program is a program that was is known nationwide as one of the is one on the leading edge of tribal state relations, and we're very, very proud of the tribal state relations in Minnesota, and with the tribes and the state Minnesota and the legislature has been able to initiate a number of programs, this being one of them. There's one thing I just want to finalize. That we do have I mentioned that there's a Minnesota Chippewa tribe passed a resolution on February 9 initiating the move back to Bemidji. I'd like to have this passed out for for the committee members. And there's just a couple of things that I'd like to finalize, one of which is the I think if the program were to be relocated back to Bemidji, which we hope will happen, that the administrative budget and the staffing pattern also follow the bill. Where right now, I think the bill suggests one staff person, and I think the administrative offices support three staff persons. And historically, when the office was administered in Bemidji, there was at least three persons there full time that administered the program.
Did Mr. Aiken, were there also people with the program that were in St. Paul or Roseville? So they had the satellite office in Bemidji or one office in Bemidji, but did they also have offices down here?
Not particularly scholarship offices. The Department of Education, which hosted the director of the education department, was located in St. Paul, which assisted and provided some technical support and some administrative support, but there was no scholarship officers in St. Paul.
So Ms. Novak, she just works for the department. Is she one of the administrators of this program?
My understanding is Ms. Novak is primarily the scholarship administrator at this point for the last 4 years.
And do you know how many people they have working there now in Roseville?
My understanding is I don't know that specifically, but I know it's probably, I think it's three persons.
Okay, well, maybe someone else, maybe Mr. Antel knows. I just kind of needed to know how many people there were before the office was closed in Bemidji, working in St. Paul in Bemidji, and how many there are now, and what your desire is. Oh, if Ms. Novak is here. Yeah, maybe you should come forward and let us know, and then we'll hear from the rest of the witnesses. Can you pull up another chair, maybe?
Good afternoon. I'm Yvonne Novak. I manage the Indian Education Office in the Minnesota Department of Education. In 2002, I had a staff of 10. They were divided between the Bemidji office, the Duluth office, and the St. Paul office.
Mm-hmm. And how many at each?
There were three staff in Bemidji. There were three staff in Duluth and the staff in the city. So that's nine. And we had one person who floated, so there was 10. Mm-hmm. After the closure of the two offices, my staff went down to four people.
Oh, so Duluth was also closed.
Duluth was also closed.
Okay, closed. And now you have four in St. Paul.
Yes.
And does the Department of Education have a position on this?
I can answer questions about the funding, and I'd like to clear up some of the statements. We had poor data collection in the Bemidji office due to a poor computer program. Mm-hmm. So for the last 10 years, since the program moved to Roseville, we've been able to go back and to redo things and clean up files. And for the last 12 years, we have actually funded between 600 and 750 students. Once you take out the students who returned refunds, maybe then it was closer to 1,000, but once that refund is back, actual base count is between 650 and 750. And that's gotten smaller because the cost of education has gotten higher, and we fund students at $4,000 per year rather than the $3,250 that we funded them previously, and sometimes lower than that.
So and are you just funding Pell-eligible students now, as Mr. Aiken said?
Madam Chair, we fund students who are Pell-eligible, Minnesota State Grant-eligible, mm-hmm. but it's based on the federal financial aid application that we get from the college and university.
And so do you go with the lowest income students until the money runs out?
Right, yes. We go with the lowest income students till the money is out. Based on a completed application, we're trying to figure out the fairest way to spend money, to send money out. Along with losing the offices, we also lost the two committees on for Indian education. They were sunsetted as they were unfunded mandates. And so we lost the committees. So we had to decide how to best spend the money, and it was the first completed. If you got your application in by July 1 and it was complete and you showed an unmet need based on what your college financial aid office, you were funded. And so that's how we've gone through base funding, needing a criteria. And we've gone through a legislative audit, and the auditor has said we need criteria for funding, and it has to be the same criteria for each student. So we've created a criteria for each student.
So this sounds like a pretty good deal with free space at Bemidji University. You know, is that something the commissioner would support, is sending a staff person up to Bemidji?
I can tell you the commissioner hasn't said anything yet on this.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Novak. Let's continue with your witnesses then.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon. My name is Will Antel. I'm an enrolled member of the White Earth Band of Chippewa Indians, and I'd like to make several points here, Madam Chair. I was the one of the first recipients of the Indian Scholarship Program back in 1955. There are three people that are alleged to be the first graduate of that program, and there's always an argument between John Buchanaga and I and the late Dwayne Dunkley. And we all graduated about the same year, and John and I graduated the same year from Bemidji State, and so Antel came before Buchanaga. So I think I can claim pretty clearly now that I was the first graduate of that program. It's been a great program. And so I want to heartily endorse the increased appropriations and more if you could get it. I can tell you what this has done for me personally. One of the years that I look back on their records, a tuition was granted to me for the sum of $18 and some cents for one quarter. Now, we look back on that and say, well, that was just a piddly amount of money. But in those days, it meant everything to me. Without that $18, I'm sure I would never have graduated from Bemidji State in the ensuing years. But the payoff was terrific. I've been a taxpayer from this state ever since that time. And I went on to get a master's degree and a doctorate degree. So the state invested in me very well. And I think I paid the state back handsomely in return. And we could go on and on about the number of people that have had that same kind of story. And so I so really hope that you can find the additional resources to fund that program. Fortunately, later on, I became the supervisor of this program. I spent 25 years in the Department of Education, and most of those years I supervised this program, along with Joe Aiken, who was the direct administrator of it. We built this program up from a mere $5,000 to well over $1 million by the time Joe and I left that program. And it was supported bipartisanly by every governor that I worked with, going back to Levander, Anderson, Perpich, and Cui. They were all very, very supportive, as well as the legislators. So it was a good program. And the commissioners that I work for required us to have a very, very close relationship with higher education, because there was always that question, does it belong in a K-12 program or does it belong in higher education? And we actually supported at one time moving it to higher education. And I see this as a very, very good move because, as Roger pointed out, the packaging of this program is critical. The resources are so short for the amount of resources that are needed for higher education, so you've got to find every dollar that you possibly can to put into this program. And so it was good to me, and it's been good to my family. Two of my children at one time were recipients of the Indian Scholarship Program. One of them did not finish. And 22 years later, he went back to St. Thomas, and there was no money available. And he couldn't get a hold of people to find out how he would go with the packaging. And so I want to emphasize that, because that did not happen when we were able to package and have this program in Bemidji, because Joel was well known by every financial aid officer in the state of Minnesota. He was well known by practically every counselor in the state of Minnesota. So it was a communication issue that was so critical to this program. And I think that's what's been lacking in the last 3 or 4 years. And I certainly don't want to imply that there was no interest. Lack of funds, as Yvonne pointed out, was important there.
Thank you. I don't mean to cut you off, but for some reason today we have a lot of bills. Usually we don't have so many, but I guess a lot of late introductions. I want to hear from Ms. Aganash, but I did have a question before you testify. Does the appropriation section in the bill, $1.875 million a year, does that include the money for this, for the staff person that you want to transfer to Bemidji? Do any of the witnesses know? Ms. Novak, do you know what that 1.875, is that just the scholarship money?
Madam Chair, the money that we receive from the legislature is spent directly on students. We do not receive an indirect cost off the $1.875 million, and that is not an increase. We've had that $1.875 million for about 10 years.
And so the staff is paid for by the Department of Education. Do you know, are those federally funded or state funded?
No, we're a completely state-funded office. We have no federal dollars. And we do package. We work with 100 higher ed institutions, and we package with about 20 tribes across the nation, including the tribes in Minnesota.
And you're located in Roseville, right?
Located in Roseville. Last year we did 30 financial aid nights across the state of Minnesota for high school parents and college fairs. So we have been out and about.
Well, I assume that if this transfer went through, that we would continue with the St. Paul office, but it would be located with the Office of Higher Education, and we might want to have them comment if they would like to. And then one of the staff people would need to transfer to Bemidji to staff the Bemidji office. But I don't know that we would have any more dollars, or if Office of Higher Education would have any more dollars. I mean, we'd have to get the staff dollars transferred as well as the scholarship dollars to the Office of Higher Education,
Madam Chair,
with
Ms.
Novak.
The four staff I have, we have someone who just resigned, and he did scholarships. Melvin Monette did scholarships in secretary. Since he's been gone, I've been packaging scholarships. So
you have one opening?
So we have one opening, but he not only does scholarships, he also does our Success for the Future program, that position. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we closed offices, everybody took two or three jobs from the other offices. Mm-hmm. So the scholarship officer just didn't do scholarship. That mm-hmm. was probably 80% of their position in the city. So,
well, it does seem to me, though, in the days of computers and phone calls, that you should be able to, you know, manage. And I do agree that it seems to me really important to have a staff person up near the reservations that can be working directly with students. And I think the Bemidji University offer is a very generous one. So if you think that you can make that work, I mean, it's kind of up to us, though. So I'm hoping you can make that work. If this happens. Now, we have a lot of people who have to agree to this. I mean, I think the Commissioner of Education and the Office of Higher Education would have to agree, and the House has to agree, and the committee has to agree, and so there's still, you know, because we'd have to get the dollars transferred. Okay. Yes, sure. Senator Tomassoni.
I agree.
You agree?
Yes.
Senator Roebling?
No, Madam Chair, as long as we had Ms. Novak here, I just wanted to ask, you commented that the program had to be more needs-based, and you have developed that more thoroughly now. And so is it just students who qualify for the Pell and state grants that are eligible, or if you had more money, would it go up higher, or how would it work? How do you distribute the amount that you have, this $1.8 million?
The student fills out an application form for Indian Scholarship Program, and it goes to their college, the higher ed institution. The higher ed institution puts the allowable budget on that form. It says what they're allowed to get in grants or aid or loans, and then it comes to the Indian Ed office, and then we call the tribes or send them a list of all the students we have an application for, and how much unmet need they have as considered by the college. And then the tribes and Indian Scholarship try to meet that unmet need. So if a student has a $10,000 unmet need for the year, and the tribe may come up with $3,000, well, we can come up with $4,000. So that makes $7,000, but they still have unmet need. And we do go from the students who have Pell or our Minnesota State grant first. We do serve them first, as we needed a criteria for how do we serve, and so we thought the students who were the most needy should be served first. And if we had more money, could we fund more students? Certainly. And could we open it up to students that had less of a need? Certainly. There's a number of people who I work with and have known who receive scholarship, but their students don't, because they all make money, and it knocks them out of the Pell eligibility and Minnesota State grant eligibility. When the federal administration lowered the Pell ceiling, it knocked financial aid ceiling, it knocked a lot of students out.
Okay, we need to hear from Ms. Aganash, and then we're going to have to lay the bill over and do a little more work on it. Ms. Aganash.
Hi, my name is Irene Aganash, and I'm an elected tribal leader for the White Earth Nation in northern Minnesota for the past 11 years. BSU's American Indian Resource Center would be the ideal place to host this program. The Beltrami County Board also passed, as part of its consent agenda Tuesday night, to support the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe resolution that Roger passed around. So the city of Bemidji is welcoming us also.
That's great.
We have to think about the best scenario for our Indian students. Is the best scenario to have the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program located in Roseville at the office of the Minnesota Department of Education, or in Greater Minnesota, where a greater number of Indian students and families live and call home? 80% of the Indian population in Minnesota are from the northern half of the state. Historically, the Indian Scholarship Program was located in office in Bemidji, and we knew as an Indian nation that there was a resource and site for our students to access. We knew that they, the students and their families, could find support and assistance by phone, but more importantly, face-to-face, with the many difficult processes of accessing higher education. We knew that if one of our students living near Bemidji without access to transportation, gas, or telephone to communicate or come to White Earth, they could find their way to Bemidji office and get pointed in the right direction. We knew that staff would call us in White Earth and with the students sitting there and talk through the obstacle of the day. We felt we were providing services to students, services beyond completion of paperwork and writing checks. We were collaborating to provide human services, and we believe we were successful, more successful working together than we are today. The newly established Tribal Nations Education Committee, comprised of 11 tribes of Minnesota, recommends the reopening of the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program Bemidji office. The closing of the Bemidji office was done without tribal consultation, resulting in a significant decline of services to Indian students and is an indirect violation of the government-to-government relationship between the state of Minnesota and Indian tribal governments, Executive Order 0210. The office in Roseville provides scholarship assistance to students. That is important. We don't devalue what the office provides. However, the Roseville office in the Department of Education is not accessible. Students will never feel comfortable walking into a building with high security, screening, and the wait to be escorted to an area of cubicles, which is home to the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program now. This is a barrier that we need to remove for our Indian students. We look to decrease barriers, and we hope that you will support this bill to provide access and support for our students.
Thank you very much, Ms. Aganasha. Really, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
I just wanted one other. Since the communication I need to mention has not been conducive to helping our students with the office down here, and I think there may have been some money that has gone back because our office in Bemidji could check to see if a student was returning money or did. They were constantly on the phone.
Why would a student return money? Because they didn't complete the course?
No, that maybe they weren't eligible for the full amount that was coming to them. Or maybe they didn't attend and the money had to be...
I do want to invite Ms. Hegard to come and comment on this proposal, and while she's coming up to the table right here, what about if we just told the Department of Education that they had to transfer a person up to the Bemidji office? I mean, Ms. Novak said there's an opening; they could hire someone from Bemidji. That we've got free office space, and you stayed with. I mean, that seemed to me a little simpler to do that to accomplish our goals here. And before I hear from Ms. Hegard, I just wanted you to, Mr. Aiken, comment on that.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think that would be an excellent idea, and the way to hit the ground running as early as we possibly can.
Right.
We're also cognizant that there was a number of audit issues that was recently raised with regard to the program. One of which is that we're concerned about in the Indian community is the return of thousands of dollars of unused scholarship money back to the state, which when Indian students and Indian parents are taking out loans to attend college, when this is totally unacceptable. And I think moving up north, you're going to have the support, strong support in the relationship with Indian tribes with the state office there, and I think we'll really strengthen the program and be able to support the students.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this audit. Was it a legislative auditor's report? Or who did the audit?
Let's see. Who did
this is the most recent.
Ms. Novak, can you just tell me who did the audit?
We had a legislative audit.
Okay.
And there was no comments about returning of funds. We spend the money. We are not allowed to spend them over biennium or in between the biennium. Every cent that we have has to be spent by June 30th of each year.
Mm-hmm.
And if a college refunds money on July 1st, we cannot spend it.
So it goes back to the general fund?
It goes back to the general fund. It's been less than $5,000 a year.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Hegard.
Madam Chair and members, thanks. I'm Susan Hegart. I'm the director of the Office of Higher Education, and I think there's still some things that I'd like to work through before this bill. I think you've made a suggestion that it be laid over, and it needs some additional work, so I'd look forward to trying to work on this with the bill's author and with others, but just a couple of concerns. One is just the question of the administrative dollars. I need to know more about that there's funds that are paid to Ms. Novak and then her staff. I know that they have other responsibilities at the department, and the question is how much of that is actually money that's used to support this program, and how much of it is sort of a cross subsidy for other areas. Mm-hmm. And we don't have extra administrative dollars. We have a very small agency, only 20-some, I think it's very few of our staff are state funded. They're either federal or loan funded folks. So we don't have administrative dollars right now that we could use to support the program. So those monies would have to come from somewhere. But another question I just have is the administratively kind of overseeing a program. I've heard people here say hosting the program, and if we're be administering the program from our agency, I would wonder what would the relationship be with the folks in Bemidji, and who would really be the person responsible for running the program, and how would that all work? So I just would like to talk more with some of the interested parties here about that. I don't disagree that our agency, we handle a lot of grant and loan money, and it's something that we know how to do. So this would be consistent with our work, but I would have some reservations, just concerns about the administrative dollars and function as well as the remote operation of a program. We've tried that before, and we've had hit some bumps. So I just want to be real clear about how that would work. Thank you.
Senator Olson. Thank
Madam
you.
Chair, just in the interest of time, if I could make a suggestion, I would be happy to work on any aspect of this bill in terms of addressing concerns this committee may have. I think the point has been made very clearly, however, that from an accessibility standpoint and in terms of cooperating with the tribal governments in our area, that having someone located in the Bemidji office or in an office in Bemidji is considered to be very vital to the Indian communities in our area.
Well, I think from just my opinion, because this is not really in my division, but I think if the commissioner and Ms. Novak were willing to hire someone to be in this Bemidji office and figure out a way to supervise them within the free space, that seems to me like that would provide kind of the most continuity in terms of this program. If we are going to transfer the whole program, then we have all the issues that Ms. Hegart brought up, although I do feel like it's appropriate for the Office of Higher Education, but it just would take a little bit more work to work out all the details. So I think that's something for you all to consider. You know, maybe go first with seeing if Ms. Nova can spare one of her four people that she has. And again, I don't know what other responsibilities they have. She mentioned something that I'm not familiar with. And can that also be done from Bemidji before we talk about the transfer? And so with that advice, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, locating the office in Bemidji State's complex or campus sounds good because it's a free offer, but I know that this scholarship is for students who go to all schools.
It just would be a satellite office. They'd still have the office down here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was just concerned that students would think that they needed to go to Bemidji
right.
State in order to go for that scholarship because it was located on their campus. But indeed, do you feel you can promote it widely enough to say you go to Bemidji State and you can get scholarship assistance there, but you can go to any campus that you want where that scholarship would be applicable?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, especially because this office, I think, is considered to be located in the American Indian Center, not in the location where you would normally go within the college to apply for financial aid, I think that distinction would be easy to make.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate file 1351 be laid over for further consideration. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Senator Dill.
Hey, Roebling, would you come and chair?
Good afternoon, Senator Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before you, I have Senate file 1264. And this is a simple bill that asks all of the university campuses in the Minsky system to provide some personal financial management training for incoming freshmen, unless they're going to take a regular full-blown class in personal financial management. And since the University of Minnesota is tough to order around, the language in the bill asks them just we're encouraging them to do that. And this is an issue that I've worked on for a decade or more. I tried to get this into the high school system, and I tried for about a half dozen years. The Senate always approved a requirement to put personal financial management and investment training for high school students into their bills, but the House would never agree because they wanted to repeal the profiles of learning and didn't want to fix them. And finally, we got rid of the profiles of learning. Senator Kelly, are you still here? Yes. Senator Kelly was good enough to put this provision in his education bill, and it became part of the social studies standards. So kids going through high school at least have got some exposure. Now, what my real goal is in this initiative and other initiatives is to try to increase the number of millionaires in this state. And there's no doggone good reason why everybody in this room shouldn't be a millionaire. If you do the right things in your life, you invest properly, get the appropriate education, keep your student debt down, marry the right person, that would help too. And I think one of the key things that has to be taught in this class is the rule of 72. And every person in this room should know what the rule of 72 is as it relates to interest rates and how long it takes for money to double. And if you don't know what it is, the education system has failed you. And I'll tell you what our education system does. It teaches us how to make money with our mind and our body, and it completely ignores teaching us to make money with money. And this happens to be a capitalistic society we live in, and we're lucky it is capitalistic so we can make money with money. Because you know what happens with life? Your body and your mind starts to wear out. And you can't make money with your body and mind so well anymore, so you need to make money with your money. That's what you do at retirement. So what I want to do with this bill that's before you is to help our citizens get off on the right foot and keep their student debt down so that they can continue to develop economically, take advantage of our capitalistic system, and become millionaires, successful citizens, and pay taxes. We know we need more taxes in this state, and how can you get more taxes when you've got these poor kids graduating from college with all this debt? Now, I've had three kids in my office, students in my office this session, two last session, that are anticipating that they'll graduate or they have graduated with a $55,000 debt. And some of them are going to be taking jobs that pay about $28,000 a year. An elementary school teacher, $55,000 worth of debt, $28,000 worth of income per year. It's a pretty sad situation. It's a 2-to-1 ratio between income and debt. It doesn't work out. Now, if you got a $20,000 debt and you come out as an engineer and you start working at $40,000 or $50,000 a year right out the chute, it does work out. So at any rate, what my idea is let's get those college students in and give them some ideas on how they can get through this four-year program or six or whatever it's going to be, minimizing debt, understand the credit card issue and how that works, and getting back to the rule of 72, what that is if you take the interest rate and divide it into 72, that's the number of years it takes for your money to double. So if you're on the investment side and you find a nice investment at 8% interest, it takes 9 years for your money to double. Now, if you're on the other side and you're dumb enough to have a big credit card debt and it's 18%, the credit card company is doubling their money every 4 years. If you take the 18% into 72, you get 4 years. It only takes them 4 years to get double the money. People just have to understand that rule of 72 and understand how it works. Now, what I've got here is a couple of examples of things that could be taught. And this might seem a little bizarre to you, but here's a loaf of bread. The price was cut and it only cost $2 for this loaf. There's 18 slices of bread in this loaf. But I could have found, last night in the Cub grocery store, I did find a loaf of bread for $1.20. And I think it had about 18 or 19 slices, too. But at any rate, roughly a slice of bread cost about a dime, roughly.
Where's the photographer?
Now this jar of peanut butter, $3.08.
Senator Dill, I hope this is being televised. I never know when it is.
Here's some Welsh grape jelly. It's about the cheapest grape jelly you can buy. $1.77. Now, one of the problems you've got with a college student is that there's only certain things you can do.
Why don't you start spreading that on the bread and pass it? We're all hungry up here. Nobody had lunch.
One thing you can do is try to enhance your income by getting a job. And there's no reason why a college kid shouldn't be working 1,500 hours a year, 20 hours a week when he's in college, and then during the three-week summer break, 60 hours a week. So you can gather about, say, $15,000 or so to try to hold down costs.
12 to 15 hours a week is kind of optimum for a college.
Well, there's 168 hours in the week, and if you spend, you know, some time in class and some time sleeping and some time doing some other things, you should have 10 or 15 hours to work.
Right.
Anyway, the way this all works out, if you take two 10-cent pieces of bread, put in, I got this all figured out here somewhere. Here it is. Okay. 20 cents worth of bread, 10 cents worth of peanut butter, 8 cents worth of Welsh jelly, 38 cents, you got yourself a nice sandwich. You throw in a 50-cent apple or a 40-cent orange, and I would recommend drinking water.
Drink water. It's healthier.
That's right. Bread and organic peanut butter.
Because Diet Pop is mostly water anyway. One of the last things you want to do is put 75 cents at a pop machine and get a can out, which you could buy for 25 cents downtown.
Or for
I don't like peanut
free
butter.
From the faucet.
I've got some bologna here. This is some bologna.
Bologna.
And it only cost $1.29 for this package, 13 cents a slice.
Senator Dill, I'm kind of running behind here on my agenda.
Gee, 6 cents a slice.
He's on a roll, Madam Chair.
So you can put together a sandwich, 20 cents for the bread, 6 cents for the cheese, 13 cents for bologna, throw in 2 cents worth of mayonnaise. It only costs you 41 cents for a sandwich. Mm-hmm. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that when you're a college student, there's only certain places where you can kind of squeeze things down. You got to expand your income, but you can squeeze things down, maybe on the transportation side, on the food side. And if you're one of these people that want to eat in a restaurant 21 times a week, you're probably going to have a $55,000 debt when you get done. Mm. So what you should do is stay at home and eat 40 cents worth of milk and cereal in the morning, bring a bag lunch to college, and eat for a buck instead of six or seven in the
how many campuses do we have? 52.
In some restaurant. And last night when I was in the Cub Food Store,
Senator Dill, I just want to know if you're prepared to make your presentation at 52 Minsky campuses and at all the orientation programs, plus the four University of Minnesota campuses. Is that going to be your interim work?
Do I get paid per diem? '96.
Boy, if you're willing to do it, I'd authorize it.
Last night I saw a young man in Cub, and he had a bunch of these things with him. He was really shopping carefully and fully using the coupons. Mm-hmm. At any rate, if you do it right, there's places you can save money, you can enhance your income, you can get through college with minimal debt, and it'll make it a lot easier to become a millionaire, a successful citizen in this community, in this state, pay taxes. And I don't like the idea of sending our college kids through the system and having them graduate with an albatross around their neck. It's an albatross to have as much debt as some of these students have. And I think we need to – I know some of these kids have immature brains, but let's try to train them on the front end when they're freshmen, and hopefully they can glide through 4 years of college and come out in pretty good shape.
Is there anyone here from Minsky or the University of Minnesota that wants to comment on this proposal? Because this is telling you have to do something. Or do you already do something like this? Or if you're not here, it means you don't care and I can just include it in the bill, no problem? Senator Dill, I think your provision should be the first to be incorporated into the omnibus bill. Senator Roebling?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 1264 be incorporated into the Higher Education Omnibus Bill. Anyone else want to comment on this proposal before we vote?
Madam Chair, does this include credit card information?
Yes. Can you come up to the table? Oh, let's add that. Yeah, before we vote, where is it? It says consumer credit on line 111. All right, I may have accomplished my goal here. Yes, introduce yourself, please, for the
table. Sorry, Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee. My name is Marissa Carr, and I'm here about a different bill, but I'm also a college student at University of Minnesota. I'm a sophomore, and I think that this is a very good idea. There's a lot that I've noticed that my peers don't know about financial management, and there's a lot that I don't know. The rule of 72 was completely new to me, and I said, I haven't had a good education then. But I think that it's a very good idea, and as a college student, I think that it would be very helpful. So I just wanted to put in my two cents. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't you come forward? The students like it, I think.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Scott, former president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. Well, we don't have an official stance on this bill. I do see it as, especially with the issues that we've brought before you with regard to tuition and the cost of education and that kind of stuff, I do see this as being a benefit to students. The one thing that I would maybe encourage is committee members and even Senator Dill to take into consideration is it's more than just a college freshman that could benefit from this. I believe anybody going to college could benefit from it, no matter where, regardless of where you are at some point in time. It's important to introduce at the very beginning, but at the same point in time, as you get ready to leave college, you're going to be facing different issues and stuff too. And I would see it as more of a benefit to students to have it as an ongoing measure.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Formal. Senator Roebling renews her motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you very much. Senator Solon.
There's no better entertainment.
Did you mind?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that I've introduced in the past, and I just want to remind the committee about the importance of it. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. It's on tuition reciprocity. Senate File 307 is a bill that would change the Minnesota-Wisconsin tuition reciprocity agreement in order to address a serious problem, which is the widening gap between what Wisconsin reciprocity students and Minnesota residents pay to attend a University of Minnesota campus. Wisconsin reciprocity students pay much less on each university campus, which I believe violates a simple rule, the rule of common sense. Wisconsin students pay $2,720 less on the Morris campus, $1,737 less on the Duluth campus, $1,573 less on the Crookston campus, and $1,191 less on the Twin Cities campus. In the 2005 Higher Education Appropriations Bill, the legislature asked the Minnesota Office of Higher Education to renegotiate the agreement, but to date, Wisconsin has refused to change the agreement. In addition to the obvious unfairness of allowing students from another state to pay less than Minnesota residents, the current agreement costs the University of Minnesota $7.3 million in lost tuition revenue. Isn't it more than that?
No, it's $7.3 this year.
How much in lost tuition revenue?
$7.3 million. Senate File 307.
Is that a year?
Yes.
Okay.
Senate File 307 would require the state to change the agreement so that Wisconsin reciprocity students attending University of Minnesota campuses would pay a tuition rate that is at least equal to the resident tuition rate. Reciprocity with Wisconsin is an idea worth preserving, but only if the current agreement is modified. And today I have with me Peter Zetterberg from the university to provide additional information as needed and to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Zetterberg.
Chair Pappas, my name is Peter Zetterberg. I work in the Office of the Senior Vice President for Academic Affairs and Provost at the University of Minnesota. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Pretner Solon for sponsoring this bill, which addresses an issue with the Minnesota-Wisconsin Tuition Reciprocity Agreement that you have dealt with before. It's an issue that does, in fact, get worse every year. The issue is the fact that we have students from another state attending our campuses and paying $1,000 or $2,000 less than Minnesota residents. That is a situation that is frankly patently ridiculous. Tuition reciprocity is a sound public policy for Minnesota. The state has had an agreement with Wisconsin since 1968. As you know, it also has agreements with North Dakota, South Dakota, and Manitoba. This is very unusual. There, outside of these four agreements, there are no other states that have full bilateral tuition reciprocity agreements. Tuition reciprocity in other states is always limited to border counties or only to certain programs. But these programs have, in fact, served the state very well. The University of Minnesota has no desire whatsoever to see reciprocity end because reciprocity is a good idea that's been good for the state. What is not good are the details of this particular agreement. And this agreement is not a sacred cow. It has been changed in the past. It's agreement between two parties. There are provisions in the agreement for what is to happen if the agreement is no longer meeting the needs of one of the parties, in this particular case, the state of Minnesota. The changes that are currently being negotiated by the Office of Higher Education are reasonable ones. We are not seeking that Wisconsin students pay more than Minnesota residents. We are only asking that they pay the same. Hopefully, at this particular point in time, it will still be possible to resolve this issue through negotiations between the two states, the Office of Higher Education representing Minnesota and the Higher Education AIDS Board representing the state of Wisconsin. Those discussions are still going on. Hopefully that will take care of it. But this, in fact, is a situation that should no longer be allowed to continue as it is. So, again, we thank Senator Prettner-Solon for sponsoring this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any particular questions you might have.
Any questions for Mr. Zetterberg? Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Mr. Zetterberg, when was the agreement last changed?
Mr. Zetterberg.
Madam Chair, Senator, the agreement was last changed in 1997. That's when Wisconsin asked that a surcharge be added to the rate on the Twin Cities campus. Basically, Wisconsin was asking for the same thing we're now asking for. They wanted the gap between the tuition rates on the Twin Cities campus to be lessened, so they wanted a 25% surcharge. The state of Minnesota agreed to that change. At the same time, the agreement was also changed so that for graduate students, students began paying the higher of the tuition rate of the campus attended or of a comparable institution in their own state, which is the way the North Dakota and South Dakota agreements work. Prior to that, the really major change was in 1983 when this particular version of reciprocity was put in play for undergraduate students, with students paying the rate of a campus in their that they paid a comparable institution in their own state. Prior to 1983, students simply paid the resident rate of whatever campus they attended.
Senator Roebling.
Madam Chair, now I've heard this issue brought up through the university, and I understand that one of the reasons is that the Wisconsin legislature does make an appropriation to Minnesota to help make up the difference, but it doesn't go into the university funds. It goes into the general fund. Is that correct? And so if that appropriation were to go into the university fund, that might help, but you would still have students sitting there paying different prices.
Senator Pappas, Senator Roebling, that's correct. The agreements with Wisconsin, with North Dakota, and with South Dakota all have provisions that actually protect taxpayers so that the cost of reciprocity to one state is not greater than the cost of the reciprocity agreement to another state. And that interstate payment specifically says in the memorandum of agreement each year that it's to go to the general fund, and that, in fact, is what happens. If that money were directed to campuses, in addition to the obvious fairness issue you'd still have with the difference in what Wisconsin students pay and Minnesota students pay, that payment Wisconsin makes does not, in fact, account for how much tuition revenue Minnesota campuses are losing. In addition to the $73 million for the university's campuses, Minsky is losing $2 to $3 million per year. So there's not even enough money, if you were to do that, to compensate for the lost tuition revenue. And let me point out that the $7.3 million, it's not just that it's lost tuition revenue. It's that Minnesota residents are paying $7.3 million more in tuition than they would have to pay if the rates had been equalized. So actually moving that interstate payment to the campuses does not address the real problems with an agreement that I think has just become broken and needs to be fixed.
And we're carrying a fiscal note. We would have to carry a fiscal note in 2009. It would be $4.5 million, and in fiscal year 10, be $9.4 million. Fiscal year 11, $10
million.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Zetterberg, the 1997 change that did the surcharge on the Twin Cities campus, was that because at the time the University of Wisconsin-Madison's flagship campus was at a higher tuition rate than in Minnesota? The situation was reversed? Or
Mr. Zetterberg.
No. Senator Pappas, Senator Latz, it was instead because Wisconsin wanted to minimize the amount of money it needed to pay the state of Minnesota at the end of each year, the interstate reciprocity settlement. And by raising what Wisconsin residents would pay, it would actually lower the amount of money the state of Wisconsin had to pay at the end of the year. That was the reason for it. The tuition rate at Madison at the time was still less than what it is for the Twin Cities campus.
Okay, Ms. Hegar, do you want to let us know what's going on with Wisconsin? My committee administrator has told me that I have to keep moving at 10 minutes each. Bill, I'm trying to move it along.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Susan Hegart. I'm the director of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, and we're continuing to negotiate with Wisconsin. I think I've told this committee we sent a letter to their board in December. They responded saying a very short letter back saying no, thank you. And I think I've distributed actually those letters to you. If I didn't, I can make them available. We've come back at them again with the request, and now this has risen. The governors have had a conversation. And our offices are continuing to talk. But we have not yet resolved this issue. With regard to this particular bill, you know, there are a couple of differences between the proposal that we put on the table to Wisconsin. Ours was roughly a four-year phase-in.
Actually, 8 years, if you play it out.
Well,
a longer phase-in.
It was a four-year phase-in. That was what we had envisioned. And there was not a change in preference. This bill would actually add an element of preference to the reciprocity agreement, and that's not something that's ever been part of a reciprocity agreement before.
Preference
that the University of Minnesota could give preference to Minnesota residents. Right now, the residents of both states have equal preference, unless a program is full. There's some details there, and if there are problems with that, we need to know about it because we need to fix those problems. But the agreement, one of the pillars is there should be parity of tuition and then parity for in terms of admission preference. So that would fundamentally change the agreement. But we are working as hard as we can on this. Obviously, we can pass a law here, but they have their own laws in Wisconsin. And so I think the border, you know, obviously comes into play. But I'm still remain confident. We're trying to work in a very positive way with Wisconsin, and we've been in close contact with the University of Minnesota and with the folks at MinSCU.
Ms. Hegart, I don't understand why Wisconsin, the governor could be a big hero if they just gave their students scholarships. Because, you know, everybody gets financial aid from different sources. So if they want to keep tuition low, the Wisconsin kids could pay the Minnesota rate, and then Wisconsin could give them scholarships to bring that down. I mean, that seems like such a simple solution, rather than giving the money to the state of Minnesota.
We have the governor's phone number if you'd like to call him.
Governor Dole?
Yes.
I know the majority leader over there, yeah. Judy Robeson. I could call her.
It's been a very tough negotiation, but we remain hopeful. We do need, though, to wrap this up by late spring, early summer, in order to give students a heads up so that they can make choices.
Okay. Any other questions on this reciprocity issue, which never seems to go away?
Sure.
Yes, Senator Roebling.
Now, is it true that the Minnesota kids who go to Wisconsin pay the Minnesota rate?
Correct.
Right?
That's
so,
correct.
So they actually
pay more.
And do you think that goes to their institutions, or does it go into their state general fund too?
Oh, it definitely goes to their institutions.
Yeah. Right. So we have the worst of both worlds.
Right. Senator Roebling, if I may, the reason, one of the main reasons why tuition in Wisconsin for resident students is less than it is in Minnesota is because Wisconsin is able to get a lot of tuition revenue from non-resident students that helps them keep the resident rate down. They have about 8,800 non-resident students, and all of them pay more than Wisconsin resident students, and most of them pay way more. Wisconsin's only 2 hours from the Chicago area where I grew up, and they draw a lot of students out of that area. We have the very unique situation in Minnesota where most of our 8,200 non-resident students actually pay less than what Minnesota residents pay. And that's one reason why. It's a major reason why our resident rate for undergraduate students is more than it is in Wisconsin. It is in part a consequence of the reciprocity agreements. And that's not an argument against them. That's just what has happened.
Mr. Zetterberg, what's the non-resident rate in Wisconsin?
It's about the same as it is on the Twin Cities campus. For the Madison campus, it's about $21,000 per year.
Yes.
Madam Chair, may I ask that Jack Rayburn with our office be asked to speak briefly to one of Mr. Zetterberg's points?
Mr. Rayburn.
Madam Chair, my name is Jack Rayburn. I'm on staff at the Office of Higher Education. Just a minor technical correction. As we are told by the state of Wisconsin, the tuition rates that Minnesota residents pay to a Wisconsin campus, the difference between the resident rate and the rate they pay reverts back to the general fund of the state of Wisconsin. In effect, what the state of Wisconsin does is take that extra revenue and pay us under the current situation.
Well, I would, have that $10 million. Okay. All right.
We'll keep you posted, Madam Chair.
All right.
Thank you.
Keep going. Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 307 be laid over for consideration for the omnibus bill. All those in favor say yes.
Aye.
Yeah. Aye. All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think Senator Bonoff has been waiting for a while, so we'll ask her to come forward. And while she's coming forward, I want to make some announcements, as long as the full committee is almost here, and maybe you can share with your colleagues. People have been coming and going. Happy birthday to Sophia. She is 21, so she is now legal. We are going to have some food available before our evening meeting. We're meeting at 6 o'clock tonight, so if you want to stop by 1:20 around 5:30, we'll have some food from My Village. Thursday, during the committee time, we're going to walk through the policy recommendations for higher ed. Members can present amendments at that time, and we'll take testimony as we go along. And then next Tuesday, we hope to have the budget figures in place, and amendments also may be offered before final vote is going to be taken on our omnibus bill next Tuesday. So I hope to be meeting with members individually and as a group over the next couple days. So our office will be calling you about that. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today with Senator Steve Kelly, whom all of you probably know, and with Associate Dean Dave Johnson from the Dean of the Policy and Research Department of Education at the University of Minnesota. Okay. I'll let him clarify that. Anyway, I'm here presenting a bill before you today for appropriating money to the Office of Educational Accountability through the University of Minnesota. And this Office of Educational Accountability has been in existence in prior years and is currently not serving this function. And as many of us on the K-12 Education Policy Committee, we're looking at subjects around some very tough issues with regard to testing and the K-12 student report card. We began to see that there were so many layers of complexity with regard to these issues that we began asking questions like, who should really be making these decisions and who is examining this? And the more we talked to people, the more we saw that these are serious issues that require a group of stakeholders from many different areas coming together to make these decisions. And in doing that investigative research, we learned that, in fact, there already was a body that existed, and it was the Office of Educational Accountability. So with this bill, we're requesting that this be reinstated, and that the reason why we're here before you, Chair Pappas, mm-hmm. is because the money for this appropriation would go directly to the University of Minnesota. I do have an amendment before I have my witnesses speak on
the A2 amendment.
Yes. So I move that the A2 amendment be added to this bill.
I'll move it.
Oh, this is not a delete all.
It is not a delete all.
Senator Wieger moves the A2 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much. And this amendment adds to the Office of Accountability bill a measure with regard to school report cards, which I will go into more detail after we have a chance to hear from our testifiers. So with that, Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Steve Kelly, currently a senior fellow at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, and I was happy that Senator Bonhoeff asked me to come and testify on behalf of this bill, because during my time as the chair of the Senate Education Committee, it was very important to me, and I think to the Senate and the people of Minnesota, to have an independent outfit that was examining issues of education accountability and providing the legislature and other parts of state government with advice about the best way to do this, so that we had a source of information other than the Department of Education. And I was disappointed at the demise of the Office of Education Accountability based at the University of Minnesota because of the value of that independent advice. And I think we're seeing today the real importance of the decision about what to measure and how we evaluate those measurements in the effects on our schools. No Child Left Behind, I think, is having a devastating negative impact on most of our schools, though in some cases it may be helping some students in some schools. Overall, it's heading us in the wrong direction. And I was just talking to a principal at a school yesterday, and the effects of teachers redirecting all of their efforts to reading and math and away from the arts and other subjects. And we've made very clear to teachers and to students that by saying what we're going to measure, we're communicating what's important to us, and having some independent advice about what and how to measure student and school performance, I think, would be invaluable to our students and to the success of our public schools. And I know, Madam Chair, that you always have concerns about the appropriation money from the budget for this purpose. And I think the money could come and has in the past come from the K-12 education budget. But I also agree with Senator Bonhoeff's purpose in making sure that the money goes directly to the University of Minnesota and can't be diverted away from that academic source of independent advice. And so I think I would leave it certainly to the chair and conversations with Senator Stumpf about how to allocate the source of the funds here. But I do think it is important to ensure that our state's research university be involved in providing this service.
So, Senator Kelly, Senator Bonhoeff, was this funded originally with one-time money or something, so there was no base money?
Madam Chair, my recollection, and I will admit that it was something that I ran out of time to dig into further when it was happening, but my recollection is that there was a base appropriation for this office, but that at one point the contract was shifted away from the university to somewhere else. And that what we're trying to do is refocus the money to the university.
And, Madam Chair, what I was told is that because the money flowed directly through the Department of Education, which is why I think originally the money did come out of the K-12 budget, that because it flowed through the department, there was some question as to the the role of this office's objectivity, and so there was a lack of trust in the relationship, and I think that had to do with why this was not successful. But I think the various stakeholders who were part of that effort have now seen that it was very important that perhaps just a small fix in terms of where the money is appropriated was all that was necessary.
So we need to find out if there is in the current K-12 budget dollars for this activity.
Madam Chair, correct? I do not believe there is money in that. We've gone through the budget.
Is not.
No.
Okay, so it was
this
shifted
would be a
away
new appropriation.
And then
exactly.
It was discontinued.
Yes.
Okay. Let's hear from your other witness then, Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Johnson. I'm the Associate Dean for Research and Policy at the New College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. I'm also a faculty member in Educational Policy and Administration. I'm here representing the Dean, Dean Darlene Bailey, and other members of our faculty that served as the home for the Office of Educational Accountability beginning in 1998. President Robert Brunings worked with the legislature in 1996 and 1997, and Senator Kelly, I'm sure, is aware of that, to frame a piece of legislation that was visionary, I think, at the time, because we had not yet become exposed to the additional accountability requirements of No Child Left Behind. So if you look at the office back in 1998 and the work that was being done here to produce good data on Minnesota public students, their achievement, their basic progress in the curriculum, dropout rates, and the like, the added complexities beginning in 2001 with No Child Left Behind have made it even more important to really work together, I think, to basically structure some measures and to deal with the complexity of the measures. It's not just a matter of looking at test scores. It's not just a matter of looking at dropout rates. It's a matter of looking at the quality of certain measures that need to be put into place, such that are being considered here are part of the report card and the STAR measurement system here in Minnesota that needs to be looked at. Minnesota is not, I travel throughout the United States working with, I also direct a research institute that looks at accountability issues for students with disabilities in relation to state and local district testing programs, in relation to No Child Left Behind and the Individual Disability Education Act. Minnesota is, like many other states, continuously grappling with issues of measurement, continuously grappling with measures of how do you raise the bar, how do you increase the standards in the state for all students. We've just reached a point, I think, where a partnership with our own state would be really important to us, I think, in terms of sharing the experience that we have in working within Minnesota as well as other places as well. Some of the other things that I think are important that you're beginning to think about here in relation to your own accountability system, deal with value-added growth models that begin to take and track longitudinally student progress over time and then begin to disaggregate that information in relation to specific student characteristics and demographic features. We really need a better understanding of some of the experiences of African Americans, males in Minneapolis, and we need better information about how to continuously measure that and show progress in the
Thank
curriculum.
You, Dean Johnson. Senator Bonoff, how much money are you looking for?
This is a blank appropriation. We do not have a fiscal note yet on this bill.
Well, I think it's whatever you want to set it at, because I don't know that there is a fiscal note required. It's how much does it take to run the office?
I'm hearing from Associate Dean Johnson that it was $500,000 on an annual basis, so this would be $1 million appropriation. And Senator Pappas, if you want to answer the I think Senator Roebling has a question. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm not sure that the university is the only and best place for this to be done. You know, I think we have a lot of private colleges that do research on education and teach a lot of our educators. We worry about objectivity, and sometimes I worry about the objectivity of the university, too. And, you know, a lot of education fads have come and gone, and a lot of them have been instituted or initiated from the university or partly promoted through there. You know, and we kind of went away from phonics, and then we came back to phonics, and there's been all these different things that have come and gone. And so it makes you wonder, are we really going to focus on basic education requirements? And I, I think that's what the people really are seeking accountability for. And once those are established, once those are in place, then we can look at other things that are beyond that. But I'm not necessarily convinced that the only place for an appropriation or for an office like this is the University of Minnesota. And I hope we look at other proposals, too.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bana.
And Senator Roebling, if you look at the amendment, the A2 amendment, this amendment is with regards to report cards. And as we've looked at our school report card, there's been a general consensus that the report cards are having some negative effect on our schools because they seem to be punitive in nature. And in many cases, they're giving students a 1 or 2 star for measures that are really beyond schools' control. And so some of the recommendations that people have made is that we should, of course, we have to keep our AYP measurements within a report card, but we could expand our report card to include factors that more accurately reflect a school district's performance. And so within this amendment, we are asking that Office of Accountability to serve as the overseeing body, but to have an advisory group that would look at the measures of what makes a good report card and a report card that is focused on excellence and that brings into account some of the things that we know are important besides just the AYP measures. And so if you look on lines 2.7, on section 3B, we list who should be a part of that advisory group. And I think that that might represent some of the stakeholders that you might think are qualified. If you look at 2 qualified experts in measurement selected by the State Council on Measurement and Education, 3 regionally diverse school district research and evaluation directors selected by the Minnesota Assessment Group, 1 school superintendent selected by the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, a University of Minnesota faculty selected by the dean. We've got
thank you, Senator Bonoff. We need to move on. Sorry, we don't have much time left. I think that it would be important to just have a conversation with Senator Stump. You know, we're all heading toward budget target time, and the money is getting very, very tight. And if this was, it just appeared to me that it was only sent to me because of who the vendor is potentially.
Exactly.
Is the Independent Office of Education Accountability, where yes. and what the tradition was. But it was traditionally funded in the K-12 committee. And so I'm not quite sure that, you know, we're working on an accountability system that we fund in the Office of Higher Education. And we've got, like, ongoing money there, I think, of, like, $300,000 or something a year. So I'm just not convinced that this is something else that the higher ed committee should take on. Senator Weaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I commend Senator Bonoff for the initiative, and a number of legislators are looking at this important issue. But we'll need to review it more as well in policy committee, but at least it's putting fellow colleagues notice of different options that are available.
So it was sent here first, when maybe it should have gone to Senator Weger's committee first because of the policy language.
Well, I just saw the amendment, Madam Chair.
Right. I don't know logistically how we do this. Send it to the Education Policy Committee.
Well, then it won't be funded.
So we just make a motion to send it from Finance to Education Policy Committee. I think we can, Senator Cohen?
Yeah. Maybe, Mr. Floyd, Madam Chair, you could, we could simply take the bill out of the division.
Right.
And then just on a motion on the floor, send it to Senator Weger's committee.
Madam Chair, I'm concerned at this point because of the budget deadlines. I didn't ask it to come to your committee, Madam Chair. That's where it got sent. But I'm thinking that because of the budget deadlines, I'm afraid if it goes to Senator Weger's committee that it won't get funded this year rather than going right to Education Finance. But I defer to Senator Weger on that.
Senator Wieger, do you want to just have your staff take a look at it, look at the language? Are you in
K-12? Sure, I've looked at it. There's a policy implication that we should have a discussion on.
I guess, Senator
Bonham,
I would recommend a dual track, that make a motion on the floor tomorrow to send it to from Finance to the Education Committee, talk to Senator Wieger about hearing it or taking a look at it. Meanwhile, talk to Senator Stump about funding it. I mean, I can't even volunteer to partially fund it because I'm having trouble funding initiatives in my own division.
Very good.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
So we'll make that motion. I think if Senator Roebling wants to come back and chair again, we'll take up my bill, Senate File 521. I don't see any. Oh, Senator Skoy, I'm sorry. I didn't see you behind the post. How could I miss you behind the post?
And Madam Chair, Senator Bach is here, too.
Okay. Well, my poor witnesses have to wait.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
It happens when the chair has your bill. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the time today to present Senate File 1010. This is an appropriation to Augsburg College to help them with their Step Up program, which is a program that works with formerly chemically dependent students as they move to improving their life. This is the 10th anniversary of the Step Up program at Augsburg, and 350 students have gone through this program and graduated and gone on to productive lives. Currently, there are 50 students in the program, and with this appropriation, we could expand that to 80. This is a leading program in the nation dealing with formerly chemically dependent students. I'm here with a couple of students of the program, Tony Landecker and Joe Trenery, and the assistant director of Step Up at Augsburg, Dave Haddon. If you would have time, Madam Chair, to allow the students to give you a short bit of their history and their story, I'd appreciate it very much.
Great. We'd love to hear from you. Just want you to know that we have 3 bills left and we have 17 minutes. So. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joe Trenery. I'm a senior at Augsburg College. I've also been on the Step Up program for 2 years now. I guess the two big most important goals in my life are to obtain a college degree and to stay sober. I've worked very hard to get to this point. I've worked very hard to get to this point, and I think the most important thing that's been offered to me is the fact that the Step Up program exists. I've had 2 other opportunities to go to college, once in Duluth and once at Normandale, and I've been asked to leave both of them because of my chemical addiction. After treatment in Center City at Hazelden, I was introduced to the Step Up program. I've been there for 2 years now. I'm going to be graduating in May. I'm currently on the honor roll. If everything goes according to plan and follows through this semester, I'll be graduating cum laude. So things are going very good, and I owe a lot of that to the Step Up program. We have a leadership team where I currently serve as the president of the governing board for our Step Up community. We're responsible for creating contracts, making amendments to the contract, and things like that. It's been an honor to be part of that program, and it's been a gift to allow me to get back into college and reach my potential that I finally have been able to accomplish.
Tell me your name again.
Joe Trenery.
Trenery. Well, congratulations, Mr. Trenery.
Thank you, Madam Chair, very much. Thank you.
Senator Skoy, this is just a one-time appropriation. Is this just for to expand the program temporarily, or?
Well, Madam Chair, yes, this is just a one-time appropriation, and I do have the assistant director here that can provide additional information, but we think that with this one-time appropriation, they would be able to expand the program, and hopefully they'd be able to keep it going on into the future. But if you would like to hear from Mr. Haddon, he can add some additional
information. Welcome. Just please say your name for the tape.
First of all, across the country, Madam Chair, Dave Haddon, Kennedy High School, class of 67. Across the country, there are 11 college programs that serve recovering youth. We're co-founders of the Association of Recovery Schools. I'm the second there. I'm also the assistant director of that organization. I'm stepping down. But I've been in the business of supporting young people in recovery for the last 15 years. From that, this particular program has developed. What we're really looking at here is across the state of Minnesota, binge drinking is an issue. Some of those young people are going to need support services. Not everyone can attend Augsburg College. And what we're taking a look at is how do we develop public-private partnerships? How do we do that? Number one, we have to make sure our program is cutting edge and we're doing the right thing. We've been working with the University of Minnesota, the Department of Psychiatry. We're involved in the evaluation of that program. SAMHSA is also involved in that particular appropriations. And we're also taking a look at policies and best practices. The other part of this is that we're also taking a look at what we have is the way that we run our program is a leadership team. It's teaching young people in recovery, grooming them how to become leaders, how to be successful, but at the same time, how to manage your chemical dependency, your emotions, and your mental health. And it's a peer leadership program. And what we are looking at is partly we've already started a partnership with the University of Minnesota, Boynton Health Services. We also are doing some partnershiping with Intermediate School District 287. And Augsburg College is not going to be able to meet all the needs of all the young people with alcohol and drug issues that do have addictions. But we have been a catalyst nationally in developing those programs. When we started out, there were only three programs nationally 6 years ago. Now there are 11 programs. And so part of what our responsibility to do is to make our program the best that it can be, but it is also then to take a look at then how we can start building partnerships and how do we reach out to other schools and make it something that they understand and how do we develop strategies so they develop services for those other schools also. So
okay.
That's a part of the effort.
Thank you. Senator Skoy, let's hear from your other witness.
Madam Chair, the rest of the committee, my name is Anthony Landecker. I am currently a senior at Augsburg College also and in the Step Up program. I'm a floor manager in Step Up, which is helping me with my leadership skills and things like that. I, like my friend Joe, have been to two different colleges, the University of Minnesota Crookston on athletic scholarships for baseball and football, and Normandale College also. And both those were absolute failures with my addictions and things like that. And until I got into the Step Up program and got into Augsburg, you know, I don't think that I could ever have been to school, back to college, without a sober support group. You know, being a student athlete isn't a whole other level as far as chemical abuse and things like that. And to have the Step Up program and to have other people who play sports that are sober and to have the support and living in a sober environment where I don't have constant temptations and things like that have been a blessing for everything. So I really appreciate you guys hearing our bill today.
Thank you very much, and good luck to you, too. It sounds like you've been very successful in the program at Augsburg.
Madam
Congratulations.
Chair.
Senator Coring.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, so when you say sober, are you? It's not just alcohol. This is all drugs that I'm saying. You're saying. Okay.
Yes, it is, Senator.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I also want to thank the testifiers for coming here, and, you know, your personal story really does have an effect on us, so, you know, wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
84% of our students have been able to stay clean and sober with us.
That's a great percentage.
So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Hayden, how do you plan to spend the $250,000?
I guess that what we're taking a look at is part of it is grooming the leadership team. And then another portion of
Mr. Beckman, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, Tracy, you're probably the man.
Let me take a quick shot. Basically, we want to grow the program to 80 where it is self-sustaining. Currently, Augsburg puts $250,000 additional dollars in to run the program. If we get to 80 students, we've just built a new dormitory for the step-up students. We think we can cash flow it at that point because we'll have some charge, some fee. The other thing is we're in the middle of best practices research. We could complete that research, which helps us then to help other schools. This counselor shouldn't even be sitting here today. He should be back counseling. And we're finding that more and more the two counselors we have are getting pulled to talk to other schools. And to, you know, it takes them out of the mainstream of what they're doing. So with this appropriation, it allows them to stay at what they're doing and allows us then to market this program, which is the other part of the appropriation, would help us with marketing. in order to get this program into the rest of the schools, it's going to take a real strong marketing program. So those
are
the
elements. Thank you very much, former Senator Tracy Beckman.
Thank you for hearing the bill.
Nice to have you here. Senator Coring moves that Senate File 1010 be laid over for consideration, the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Thank you for your consideration, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bach wins the award for the smallest request of the session.
Madam Chair, I hope because it's so small we're able to be successful, but I think for the day I probably get the award for the constituents that have traveled the farthest.
Yeah.
I have with me two of my constituents from Grand Marais, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here to present this. Madam Chair, to remind the committee where Cook County is the tip of the state of Minnesota, going out into Lake Superior. Borders along Lake Superior and the Canadian border, and Senator Wieger, I believe, has recently purchased a cabin up in my district. Senator Bonnup has a cabin up in Cook County. Senator Han has a cabin up in Cook County, and many, many people I see weekly here at the Capitol spend time up on the North Shore and in Cook County vacationing. But because of its remote nature, higher educational opportunities for people that live in Cook County are very difficult for them to achieve. From Grand Marais to Duluth, to its closest higher educational institution, is about 120 miles and virtually all two-lane road. And so when I was back in the House, one of my witnesses' husbands came to me, who was a longtime serving county commissioner by the name of Wes Hedstrom. Came to me, and they had an idea to create a nonprofit higher education district up in Cook County, and really something pretty unique. And I was really, really proud to author that bill along with Senator Johnson here in the Senate, and able to secure for them $80,000 a year to help fund this nonprofit to provide for higher educational opportunities for people that live in a very remote area of the state. So, Madam Chair, I was very pleased to be able to do that, and we were successful, and the program has been so successful that $80,000 a year no longer provides for the needs of the program. So we're here to request an additional $40,000 a year to be put into the base so that this program can continue to grow. And Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce my first witness, and she has a member of the family, a niece, that is a longtime employee of the Senate and formerly of the House. We all know and love MJ Hedstrom for what she's been able to do for all of us as members here, and I'm very pleased to introduce her aunt, Thelma Hedstrom, my constituent from Grand Marais.
Great. Welcome, Ms. Hedstrom.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman, Chairperson. And this is not my first time to the Senate. I was here with my husband, Cook County Commissioner Wes Hedstrom, and along with Tom Bach and with Doug Johnson, who was then the state senator. And we had been unsuccessful up to that time to pointing out that our area really needed a community college. And when all the various community colleges were being awarded to various localities, we were passed over. So a group of people just put together, you know, what kind of things could we do to help our people that are so so far from any higher education program? So I just kind of felt like it would be a good reminder to let people know that we are so remote and we are so appreciative of the money the state has been giving us. Thanks.
So what do you do with the $80,000? What does that pay for?
Yeah, we have a wonderful program, and I'm going to let Paula answer to that because she's brilliant.
All right, great.
Well, Thelma, thank you very much. I'm Paula Sundet. Thank you much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. The $80,000 is used to, and we also receive additional funding from our county. We receive $9,500 a year, and also we receive grants from various different foundations, and we also receive donations from community members. And that money is spent to provide programming in Cook County so that people don't have to leave the area. Specifically, primarily we're working with interactive television that's delivered from mostly the Minsku schools, although we're forging relationships with the University of Minnesota at this point as well, and the College of St. Scholastica. And also we work with online program, correspondence course. Because we have the advantage of being a nonprofit organization, as Thelma mentioned, we looked initially at the community college. And although that would be exciting to have a community college in our community, it doesn't actually serve the needs of the people that are there. We're a diverse community, and we have diverse needs. So we have people working on anything from certificate programs all the way up to PhD programs. And because we're a nonprofit, we can serve that need. So did that answer your question of how the money is being spent? I can address some additional things as far as why we want the additional $40,000.
What's the nonprofit then? It's not a Minsku program?
It's not a Minsku, but the money is actually is distributed through Minsku to us, but mm-hmm. We're not tied to
What's the name
Minsku.
Of your nonprofit?
Cook County Higher Education.
Okay.
And the additional funding will be so that we can increase the programming that we're currently offering. At the moment, we're working with Mesabi Range and Technical College and Hibbing Community College, some with Fond du Lac, Vermilion Community College. Those are the primary ones that we're offering, and mostly offering health care programs. In the next 5 years, we have some critical shortages, and so we're addressing that need.
So do students mostly take their classes online?
Most of the students are working through interactive television and online, so they're combining that. And then we also utilize the excellent resource of retired individuals, folks like yourself. If you retire up there, we'll be calling on you to teach classes or to serve as mentors. And that really makes a big difference because then people get the actual classroom experience and really feel like a student group.
What makes you think I'm close to retirement?
Well, people are retiring younger and younger these days.
Great. My staff says that we don't think we need the A1 amendment. I guess the House put that language on.
There, apparently, Madam Chair, in the House there was some concern that the language that was actually drafted in the Senate wasn't clear enough. We do have a base appropriation of $80,000 mm-hmm. a year, and the intent of the bill is just to increase that base appropriation to $120,000 per year.
Right.
Somehow the House felt that the language that we drafted here didn't do that, so they felt there was a need for an amendment. I guess I would have to defer to counsel whether we actually need a clarifying amendment or not.
Well, the original bill says for the biennium, and this says for each year of the biennium. So maybe we do need it. Beginning with fiscal year 2008, the funding base for this program shall be $120,000 per year.
It should be $60,000
a year.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So should we take the amendment?
Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Take the amendment.
You're going to have to carry $100,000.
Right, I don't want to carry $120,000. I just want to carry $40,000. Let's just amend the bill on line 111 to say for each year of the biennium. But then $40,000 is a year in addition, right?
Correct.
So it's actually an addition to $80,000 for a biennium. You know, we're just going to lay it over for consideration, right. So I think we can kind of work out the language with the staff.
I think we all know what the legislative intent is.
Yeah. So the total cost of the program currently is $240,000, and we would be, if we approve this, we'd be increasing it by $80,000 for the biennium.
Madam Chair, the current cost of the program is $160,000, and we'd be increasing it by $40,000 per year.
It's $160,000 for a biennium.
Currently.
Biennium. And then plus $80,000, but stay in biennium. Biennium.
Correct.
Okay, so that's the amount then we carry as an increase, is $80,000. Okay.
Madam Chair, with that intent, I would move Senate File 313.
Senator Wieger moves Senate File 313 be recommended for inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I guess I have to ask, I haven't had lunch. I feel faint. I have to ask my witnesses if you can come back at 6 o'clock. Is since we kind of ran out of time here. So we can give people a break before their next committee. Sorry. Okay, did everybody hear all the announcements? We're coming back at 6 o'clock. Dinner's at 5:30 and 1:20. Committee's adjourned.
Okay.
Adjourned or in recess?
Are we adjourned or in recess, Emily? Yeah.
Recess.
We can adjourn. If we recess, we don't need to have
Then we don't have a quorum.
That committee is not adjourned. The committee is in recess until 6 p.m.
Better.
What?
Undo the first.
We have to have a motion to not be in recess, to not be adjourned.
So you're supposed to go
Point of clarification. We'll accept the point of clarification. I don't know what we mean.
Recess means you have to go out and play. During you have to go to work.
Hold on, recess.
Are we supposed to leave our stuff here?